The National Broadcasting Company presents Eyes Aloft.
Army Flash. One, Multi Motor, Low, Steam, 21, Albert 5, Overhead, South.
Eyes aloft, watch the skies, watch for planes flying the lanes of the war. Eyes aloft.
Eyes aloft, the 4th Fighter Command of the United States Army Air Forces, in cooperation with West Coast radio stations, presents this series of Monday evening programs honoring the 150,000 volunteer civilian observers and filter center workers whose round-the-clock vigilance keeps watchful guard of the Pacific coast against attack by enemy planes.
Eyes aloft, night and day, will help protect the USA.
Ken Carpenter speaking. Tonight, the 11th edition of Eyes Aloft, featuring Aircraft Warning Service True Stories. Presentation of the weekly Gold Trophy Award, the Gordon Jenkins Orchestra and the Sportsmen in a tribute to Navy Week, excerpts from the famous McKinley Diary, and our new feature, Why Will They Do It? During this broadcast, we will switch to San Francisco, where Colonel John C. Gray will interview the director of the 9th Region of Civilian Defense, James C. Shepard. Here now is your Eyes Aloft narrator coming on watch, Gain Whitman.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Here is a short story about a woman who wanted to serve her country in these troubled times, but didn't know how. Some can serve their country in a noble way, wearing a uniform, marching to the blare of bugles and drums. Some are honored with awards of recognition, the Purple Heart, the Silver Star, the blue and gold 500-hour medal of the Aircraft Warning Service. There's most usually glamour and glory and respect paid to those who serve their country well in time of war, but there are some who want to serve and can't. Here is a simple and beautiful story about a woman who wanted to do her part to help her nation. It was told to us a short time ago by Mrs. Geneva Lepper, who is now the area supervisor around Oroville in Butte County, Northern California. Last December 8th, Mrs. Geneva Lepper took over the responsibility as the Oroville chief observer and organized that post. Her next-door neighbor was a Mrs. Marge Reel. One cold December morning, Geneva Lepper stopped by to see Mrs. Reel.
Geneva, come in.
Chilly morning. I can only stay a minute.
Oh, going downtown to shop?
I'm going out calling on people this morning. I'm trying to line up more observers.
Oh, you're having a time, aren't you?
Oh, it's just a matter of getting around and explaining to people what the Aircraft Warning Service is all about.
I wish I could volunteer my service, Geneva.
I understand perfectly, Marge. Women with young children just have to stay home and take care of their kids, though.
Yeah, and Wesley has the sniffles again this morning.
Oh, I hope you have him in bed.
I certainly have. I hope Jerry doesn't get another cold.
Oh, I wouldn't worry about Jerry. Say, Marge, It just seems I'm away constantly these days.
Yes, I know.
I should say day and night.
Oh, I think the work you're doing is wonderful, Geneva. You're such a good organizer.
Well, we'll see about that when I get all my observers lined up to fill all the various shifts. But what I came over to tell you, Marge, is that since I'm away nearly all day lately, you might want to run over and use my phone.
Well,
I mean, Elmer insists I lock the house whenever he and I are both gone.
Yeah, that's best, I suppose.
And so Elmer and I decided we'd leave the key under the flower pot there on the front porch.
Oh?
So anytime you want to go over and phone while I'm not there, you know where the key is.
Well, that's awfully kind of you, Geneva.
No, it's nothing at all. Now, you just help yourself to the phone anytime you want. You're stuck here at home with your kids and in case there was an emergency, you'd need the phone. Well, I'll have to be on my way.
Oh, you're very thoughtful, Geneva.
See you later, Marge. I hope Wesley gets over his sniffles.
Mrs. Geneva Lepper was engrossed in the war effort work of organizing the local Oroville post. She was away from home constantly those first few months. There was no time for anything else. But Mrs. Marge Reel couldn't get out from her home to participate in such fascinating work as being a ground observer. But she had the burning desire to do some small thing to help her country.
I'm not doing anything to help, it seems. How can I? How can I get out and do any sort of war work? There's Wessie and Jerry and no one to stay with them. What can I do? The children have to come first. Yes, they must come first with me.
The problem troubled Marge Reel, for she was a normally patriotic woman, and she wanted to help. Well, later that day, she went next door to the leper residence to use the phone to order groceries. She found the key under the flower pot, right where Mrs. Leper said it was.
Oh, dear. Oh, it's awful of me to criticize, but Geneva's house certainly looks mussy. Flowers in the vase, dead. And a newspaper on the floor, where Elmer was reading, I guess. Oh, now I know. Geneva just doesn't have time to do her housework these days. Pick up this paper for her. I guess I could throw these old flowers out for her, too. What? I know. I know how I can help. I know what I'll do, and I'll do it every day. I can't be an observer, and I can't go to Red Cross meetings, and I can't... Why, I can keep Geneva's house clean and tidy for her while she's working so hard. Yes, that's what I'll do. Every day while Wessie and Jerry take their nap, I'll come over and keep the chief observer's house in order. That's how I'll help. Well, I'll start now. I'll get the broom. Just mop off the place.
You say there's no glory, no thanks in house cleaning? In this case, there was. A simple task, yes, but one with a heart and purpose back of it. It's the way one young woman, Mrs. Marge Reel, whose husband is in defense work in the Panama Canal Zone, helped out. She had no time to serve as a watcher at the observation post. There were children to be cared for. She must have known there generally is no recognition for the task of housework. But Mrs. Marge Reel, good neighbor of busy Mrs. Geneva Leper, must be honored. Tonight, we pay tribute to a real American woman who created an opportunity to do her bit for her country. Good neighbors make good Americans. We salute Mrs. Marge Reel. We inaugurated a thumbnail feature which we call Why Will They Do It? It's our brickbats and bouquet department. Tonight it's about a fellow who... But wait, you be the judge. And afterwards, those in the studio here will have the chance to vote with a round of applause or a good solid boo. Why Will They Do It? This one actually happened 10 days ago. A man ran into trouble. He was the chief observer of a certain post in a certain good-sized city in a certain western state whose abbreviation is spelled C-A-L-I-S. One afternoon, this somewhat overworked chief observer was checking schedule with one of his observers.
Well, Henry, I'd like to change your watch this week.
Change it? To what?
You've been taking the 6 p.m. evening shift once every 2 weeks for the last 2 months, Henry.
Yeah. Getting kind of tired, haven't eaten my dinner so early those nights. Have to eat at 5:30.
Oh, now, that doesn't really upset you, does it?
Well, have to watch my diet. Doc told me a couple of years ago I should eat regularly and at the same hour every night.
Well, then, this new watch I put you down for ought to fix it just right.
What shift you got me down for now, Jim?
A little later in the evening. 10 p.m. to 1 a.m.
1 a.m.?
Yeah.
Are you trying to kid somebody?
Why, no, Henry.
You got it in for me or something?
Of course not.
Why try to dish that 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. stuff on me?
Well, I could have asked you to take the watch from 1 a.m. to 5 in the morning, Henry.
No. And I don't go for that 10 to 1 a.m. stuff either. What do you expect a fellow to get any sleep? What do you want me to do? Go around the office all the next day half asleep? Watch for airplanes from 10 to 1 a.m.? You better get yourself another sucker. I'm through. You can't pull that on Henry.
But two nights later, this is what Henry was doing.
Okay, I caught you. What you got?
Three kings, Henry.
Three kings? Wow.
You're parked, and I'm clean.
Oh, now, don't quit, Bill. It's early.
Well, it's 3 a.m., Henry. I promised my wife I'd be home at midnight.
Well, don't worry. We'll accept your check from now on, Bill.
Yeah. Oh, don't go. The night's only a pup. Let's play till 4, huh?
Henry's right. Don't break up the game, Bill.
Well,
we'll show you some real poker from now on. I tell you, boys, let's set the limit for 5 a.m.
Well, okay with me. Make it 5.
Who's sleepy? Not me. Old Henry's good for the rest of the night at this game. Deal him, boys. Who has to buy?
Why will they do it? That same so-called solid citizen complained of taking watch at the observation post from 10 to 1 a.m. But he's raring to keep a poker game going till 5 in the morning. What's your vote for a guy like that? A boo or a round of applause?
Boo!
You bet your sweet life. All a bird like that deserves is a good, solid bouquet. And we hope you're listening tonight, pal. Now you know what the rest of this Pacific Coast community thinks of you. You want to get back in good with the rest of the gang again? Okay. Then go to your phone right now and call your chief observer and tell him you'll take any watch he can assign you. We hope there'll be no hard feelings for bringing this to your attention. Incidentally, in off moments, poker is our favorite indoor sport, too. But let's not give phony excuses to get out of a responsibility to the community and the nation. Yeah. Why will they do it? Responsible for the direction of the vast civilian defense system of the 9th Region of the United States is Director James C. Shepard, whose headquarters are in San Francisco. Supervisor of the activities of more than 1.25 million people dedicated to lessening the effects of the enemy's blow should it come. James Shepard must coordinate civilian operations with the demands of Army, Navy, Red Cross, and many other concerned agencies. At this moment, we switch controls to San Francisco, where Lieutenant Colonel John C. Gray, Assistant Executive Officer of General Kepner's staff, will interview James C. Shepard, Director of the 9th Civilian Defense Region. Calling San Francisco, please.
Colonel Gray speaking. Here with me is James Shepard, a man who has one of the nation's biggest civilian defense jobs. Just how many people come under your direction, Mr. Shepard?
In this region, over 1,200,000 persons, or about 10% of the population, have realized the seriousness of war, enlisting in the vast program of civilian defense.
Well, the war has been brought pretty close to us.
Yes, bombs have fallen on our shores. Ships have been torpedoed off our coast. And there have been token shellings from submarines.
Well, don't you think the fact that we here on the coast are in an actual theater of operations has increased the desire of every single one of us to do his part in winning this war?
I would like to think that, Colonel Gray.
Like to? What do you mean?
There are still far too many who are indifferent to this nation's circumstances. This war will not be won until every man, woman, and child is doing something definite and tangible towards winning it. Victory will never be purchased by dollars and cents alone.
I agree, Mr. Shepard. For 10% of the people in this region who have volunteered to look out for the safety of themselves and the other 90%.
Yes, Colonel. And closely allied in this vital mechanism is the work of the 150,000 persons who are serving in the Aircraft Warning Service of the 4th Fighter Command. They are an important factor in the active defense of their country from air attack.
And I think these people are beginning to be more thoroughly understand and believe in the importance of the work they are doing.
Well, I know that some who sit in lonely posts or in isolated filter centers, day after day, night after night, sometimes wonder if their service is really important. But they must have faith. They must continue to serve. And others must volunteer to assist in the job. The Aircraft Warning Service must continue. the observers and filter center workers must be constantly on the alert and ready for any emergency which may come.
Right, Colonel. Pardon me, but I can't help but think of you as one of us in uniform. Do you suppose the other 1.25 million civilians working with you realize that they are shoulder to shoulder with the men in the armed forces and are releasing many thousands of soldiers for combat duty?
Some do, perhaps. Some also realize it is a privilege to serve in the defense of their home rather than a duty. Though they receive but little acclaim, theirs is the stern and durable satisfaction that they are serving effectively as citizen soldiers.
Mr. Shepard, didn't General DeWitt write you his opinion of these citizen soldiers, as you call them?
Yes, Colonel Gray, and I've quoted his letter often. General DeWitt said, quote, "Too much credit cannot be given a citizen who voluntarily assumed a responsibility in the civilian defense organization. In many cases, they do so at considerable personal sacrifice to themselves in order to enforce security measures necessary for the protection of the community, the state, and the nation. The citizens of all communities should be made fully aware of what these men are doing and the manner in which they are meeting their responsibilities," unquote.
Well, then, General DeWitt certainly places a high value on the citizen soldier, doesn't he?
Indeed.
But are too few doing too much these days?
Much as I regret to admit it, that's all too true, Colonel Gray.
And the civilian defense system needs more volunteers, doesn't it?
Yes. And let me say that if you people who are listening to this program want to get this war over with speedily, you'd better enlist for some sort of civilian defense duty.
I suggest you tell them whom to call, Mr. Shepard.
Call your local defense council. Your telephone operator will give you the number. Just ask for the local defense council.
And they should do it right away, too.
Yes, indeed. Call your local defense council office at the very latest, first thing tomorrow. Tell them you want to become a part of this great civilian army. Do your duty by enlisting as a civilian in the aircraft warning service. Let me remind you that to live in America does not make you an American. But to serve America does make you an American. Thank you.
And thank you, James C. Shepard. This is Colonel Gray in San Francisco returning the program to Hollywood.
United States Navy is the most powerful force on the seas. Back in 1922, the Navy League of the United States inaugurated an annual Navy Day observance. October 27th is Navy Day. This evening, the Gordon Jenkins Orchestra and the Sportsmen pay tribute to the Navy. They join our Eyes Aloft theme song, which is soon to be published, with the thrilling fighting songs of our men who wear the blue. It's Eyes Aloft, Fighting Sons of the Navy Blue, and Venerable Anchors Away.
The ships of state sails on with battle flags unfurled and stars and stripes come into view. We hold the peace and light of liberty for all the world. The fighting sons of the Navy Blue. Beware, you
pirate and buccaneer. We'll sail wherever we please. Take care, for Uncle Sam will never rest until he's won the freedom of the sea. But if it's war they want, we've got just what it takes to make democracy come true. We've got the ships, we've got the guns, we've got the courage too. We're fighting under the Navy blue. Anchors away, my boys, anchors away. Farewell to college boys, we sail at break of day. Through our last night of shore, dream to a form. Until we meet once more, here's wishing you a happy morning home. One of our lands enjoyed by sea was once the sentinel's cry. By the morning 20th century, Paul Revere must watch the sky. By the law, night and day, we'll help protect the USA.
Turn now to the account of the McKinley Diary. Unedited excerpts from the famous little black and white diary. Notes jotted down by observers of the McKinley Oregon Post. Not too long ago, the good people who live in the green little mountain valley built a monument. A monument designed to withstand the ravages of time. The structure is small, simple. A roof of tar paper, unpainted walls, a plank floor. A monument to defy time. Well, the building is frail, to be sure. But the spirit of the community which erected the little observation post is strong. It is the spirit that is the monument that will outlast time. And as the ages come to pass, the spirit of the community will be handed from father to son, from mother to daughter. Someday the shack will no longer be needed. Someday it will crumble and return to the dust. But the spirit of the people of the shack will stand as a monument eternal. A monument to what? A monument to home, to the right of freedom, to America. A monument to the community of McKinley, a part of America. Once again, step into the little building. Ah, yes. Here is the diary of the watchers. Here is an entry we might read over.
September 16th. Came on duty at 6:30 a.m. Came up with Jay as he went to work. Yes, we all have to work together and do our part to help win the war. And if our husbands have to go and fight for our country, we will have to keep our chins up. Wives before us have had to keep the home fires burning. So I guess we can take it. Audrey Freeman.
Let's turn back a page or two. Here. September 7th, 10:30 p.m.
My school started today in Dora with 15 fine youngsters. I'm looking forward to a delightful and worthwhile year with them. It always gives me a genuine thrill to return to the schoolroom. My work necessitates a change in my hours at the post. However, as soon as the rush season, tanning, and the like is over, I plan to come here from 6 p.m. to 12 midnight, two nights a week, thereby getting in the time I have pledged myself to give to this work. Three of my pupils are fellow observers, Forrest Easton, Evelyn Oberman, and Joe Harry. Rosabelle Brown.
One more entry now before we have to move along. Let's look back here in May.
Sunday, May 17th, 1 a.m. Forrest is asleep. been counting the names in the logbook. There are 16 men and 21 women listed as watchers. Some have been at the post only once. Some have been on duty often. It is a shame that more persons do not help with this work. Cars are at this moment rushing along the highway through the night, carrying wide-awake revelers home. Yet most of them would suddenly become sleepy and tired if asked to help the United States Army guard the nation for a few hours once a week. The few who are doing the work of others must find encouragement in thinking of Washington at Valley Forge, Molly Pitcher at Monmouth, and MacArthur at Bataan. T.S. Easton. And so we close McKinley Diary till another time. Ladies and gentlemen, we are taking the suggestion of you who listen to these programs. And here is Ken Carpenter to explain. Ken?
Well, in the past few weeks, we've received numerous letters from all parts of the Pacific Coast. Frankly, our Board of Judges, which selects the Gold Trophy Award winners, has been criticized on one score. Many letters have come to us from listeners saying that they believe that McKinley Post justly deserves to receive one of the handsome trophies. Now, let it be understood that none of these letters has come from the McKinley Post area. Letters have come from the Olympic Peninsula, from San Diego, from Bellingham, the Mojave Desert, Portland, Santa Barbara, where not, suggesting that surely McKinley Post in Southern Oregon has performed an outstanding service to the 4th Fighter Command. It seems our listeners hold a warm spot in their hearts for the community of McKinley. So tonight our Board of Judges recognizes the vote of the listeners. And here now is Captain Robert S. Whipple, commanding officer of the Regional Signal Aircraft Warning Service Company. He will present this week's National Broadcasting Company's Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award. Captain Whipple.
The McKinley, Oregon Post is located in a territory over which few planes are ever sighted. Many observers at the McKinley Post have never had the privilege or thrill of reporting an airplane to the Army. Because the community is small, McKinley Post is operating in very few observers. Many observers have enlisted or have been drafted. Still, every shift has been maintained. The little post has a high efficiency record. It is with real pride that we present this week Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award to the McKinley, Oregon Observation Post, a post in a truly 100% American community.
At the conclusion of this program, the handsome gold trophy will be rushed by Army car to Union Air Terminal in Burbank, where it will be placed aboard a transport plane and flown north. Lieutenant J.C. Runyon, ground observation officer in the Southern Oregon area, has already been notified by long-distance telephone today and is making plans for presentation of the award at once to the community of McKinley. This is Gain Whitman saying goodnight to the 150,000 Aircraft Warning Service volunteer civilians who keep constant vigil of our home front so that America will be safe from any attacks by air. Good night.
Eyes Aloft is written and produced by Robert L. Redd. Music is composed and conducted by Gordon Jenkins. This is Ken Carpenter, charging you to always remember Eyes Aloft.
Eyes Aloft, watching the sky, watching the planes flying the raindrops above. Eyes Aloft, always on guard, lending a hand, protecting the land we love.
Eyes Aloft has come to you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.